Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Looks like no problem here being on the air. It says we're on the air, so we're going to trust the awful people at Blog Talk, who hopefully none of them are listening. We got nobody in the chat room either right now, so we can't get any feedback on that, but it says we're on the air, so we're going to keep on rolling, folks. For those who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, we had all kinds of issues last week. We had to bump Dr. Edward Guimont to next week, so we'll be talking about Flat Earth and all that fun stuff next week. Tonight, we have and I'll have more information on that at the end of the episode, as usual. But for the folks who are wondering where the hell we were last week, Blog Talk screwed us. That's the long and the short of it. So we're going to probably end up moving to a different service at some point soon. But again, why am I rambling about this? We have a real show to do. So tonight on the program, the Summer of Strangeness continues with a couple of guests. I believe this is our first twofer here this summer. Steve McDaniel and Adam Allen. Steve is the founder and lead software developer, while Adam is the co-founder, legal affairs, and data licensing guy for this new project known as SkyHub. And what SkyHub is, I'll just sort of give you the really short version. These guys can tell you the long version. We're going to explore this whole concept here tonight on the program. A worldwide public search for UAPs using a global network of machine learning, smart cameras, and sensor arrays built by you with our open source software. So it's an ambitious idea for the folks who heard our show with Chris Cogswell a few weeks ago at the beginning of the month of July. He's the science advisor for SkyHub. He's the chair of the science advisory board, which is even more impressive. So he talked a little bit about this, and I wanted to know more. So through Chris, we got Steve and Adam here on the show. So with all that said, welcome to the program, guys. We're really looking forward to exploring the SkyHub concept with you here tonight.
Thanks for having us on.
Now, traditionally, we start out with the bio, the background, so, you know, introduce yourselves to the Banal of America audience. I guess we'll start with Steve, since he called in first, so we'll reward him for his, for being, he actually called in before I was on the show tonight, so it's like, I better hurry up and get started here, this guy's like waiting for me. So, Steve, you know, what's the bio, the background, you know, you can hold off, I guess, if you want, or go right into sort of how SkyHub formed. But we want to know who you are first, and you know, then we'll move on from there.
All right. I'm Steve McDaniel. My day job, I'm a software engineer, so I've essentially done a lot of software and embedded development over my career. I actually got started in naval intelligence and spent about 5 years in the military. And then I spent about a total of 16 years in the intelligence community, and I worked for companies like Raytheon and Northrop Grumman. And I've done a lot of hardware development, software development, kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to computer stuff. And eventually it led, like, I don't know, a weird chain of events led me to working on a UFO project. And we can jump into the details after Adam jumps in here.
All right, Adam, you know, who is Adam Allen? What's your bio? What's your background?
Yeah, I'm actually the non-technical one of the three founding members. Steve is a software guy, and Corey, I think he's traveling tonight. He's a software guy. I'm an attorney in Houston, Texas. I spent the last 12 years studying UAPs and tinkering with my telescopes and recording the skies after an event in 2008. And I heard about these guys and this crazy idea of building a global machine learning network of smart cameras. So I offered to throw a few pro bono legal hours their way if they had anything they needed a lawyer for, and here we are thousands of hours later with, you know, 500 guys and girls putting together this actual global network.
Very nice, very nice. All right. So, Steve, tell us how did SkyHub come about, and sort of flesh out a little bit. You know, I gave the elevator pitch there, but, you know, tell us exactly what this is and really how it came about. You said it was kind of a funny turn of events.
Yeah, so I've actually been into the UFO community for less than a year. I actually got into the community by making a PDF search engine that would let you grab a PDF file, index it, and basically search it like you would search Google. So just to test my software, I decided to grab all the UFO files that have ever been released by the major world governments. And that is what got me into the UFO community, because when I published it, people started reaching out to me, and I got together with a group of people, and we started working on this tracker system to essentially study the UFO phenomenon. So kind of the idea was, you have all these people, they're having experiences, they're seeing UFOs, and there's really no good evidence anywhere. So there's a lots of physical evidence lacking, but there's a lot of stories, right?
Yeah.
So the idea was, let's remove the human element, and we'll put together an array of cameras and sensors to actually collect data to understand what's going on. So kind of my thought was, is if the UFO phenomenon is really happening and it's real physical things, like if it's manifesting itself in reality, it's leaving some sort of fingerprint that's detectable or observable. So we started putting together cameras and sensors and writing software for this platform. And together with Adam and Corey and now Chris and, you know, the whole community, we've put together a platform to aggregate all this data in a central database with the idea and hope that we can share this database with the public and with academics and researchers so they can actually do real scientific research on UAPs and UFOs.
And what now I see here, I'm looking at the tracker thing here. If you go to folks, we didn't even mention the URL. Skyhub.org is the URL for this project. I guess you'd call it a project, right? So I'm looking at the, if you scroll down on the page, you see this is it, what is you, so tell me about this box thing. Because that's the first thing that kind of like jumped out at me as I was looking at what you guys are working on. Is this kind of what you want to put around the world essentially?
So, yeah, there's actually a little – what's that?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm terrible with these double guests. I don't know who's best to answer the question. I don't know either one of you guys, so I don't know who's the best one to answer the question on this. So, yeah, we'll start with Steve, and we'll work from there. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm sorry, man.
So there's a little history here with this box. So when we first started, there was a lot of prototyping and – people are using like large PVC pipes and boxes to put equipment in. But as the community grew, it attracted professionals that design enclosures for a living. So we had a guy, Richard, who came along, who's one of our core team members. And he actually designed and basically built this whole box. And part of it is made from 3D printed parts and other board. You just assemble together with a power supply and put all the equipment in. So that's really like the power of open source and building a community. We had someone volunteer and actually design this case out with all the instructions so people can put it together and build it and deploy their tracker in that enclosure.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what this there's many directions here I want to go. There's a lot to talk about, so let me think for a minute.
Hey, I'm going to let Steve take the lead on this, and then if anybody has any other questions for me, they can go to Adam.
Okay. I don't know if that means he's leaving the show or what.
Oh, no, I'm not leaving. I just don't want to keep talking over you guys.
Okay, all right, all right. That sounded almost like, I'm getting the fuck out of here, man. I don't know, why'd you drag me into this?
No.
All right, so, okay, so I'm looking at the box here. I'm just trying to figure out how you guys go from concept to making this happen. Now, how much does it cost, do you think, for a person if they want to get one of these and put it in their backyard? You know, how much is one of these boxes going to cost?
So this is kind of a do-it-yourself effort, right? So we tried to keep cost in mind. So bare minimum, for about $300, you can deploy a tracker. But that doesn't include that fancy case. So we're working through the pricing and details for that case right now. There is one case that has been built. So we're kind of working out those details and prices for people to make sure it's affordable, but we wanted to make sure that anybody could deploy this. So we thought $300 was probably a reasonable amount for most people to be able to set this up and deploy it at their home. And of course, you know, people, there's enthusiasts out there with lots of expendable income that are spending thousands of dollars on putting together their own tracker.
Right. Now, okay, let's say we don't necessarily have to say this box, right? But like how big, how much sky, let's say I put one in my backyard. I mean, I guess you'd have to see the backyard, right? But like how much sky can one person cover you really don't need like, you know, five people in every town or whatever. But I guess that's what I'm asking you. Like how much sky can you cover? Because when I talked to Chris, I kind of likened this to like I watched this show on Discovery ID where it's like how they catch the criminal through security cameras, and it's always like one camera gets, you know, maybe like the front of the car but not the license plate, but then another one gets the side of the guy's face and they kind of can piece it all together. It's kind of like what the idea is in a way with this, right? Where it's kind of like you can get more information if you see one of these things go by, then you can go to the other sensors and see where it might have gone next, right? Is that kind of where you're trying to pull off here?
Yeah, exactly. So you can actually watch a lot of the sky, especially with a fisheye camera. So we're recommending to everybody to use a fisheye camera when they deploy their tracker. So you get a really good picture of the sky. It has a 180-degree view of the sky. So if you put it in a high enough location, you're going to get a very good view of the sky in your area. And kind of the idea is hopefully in your city or your town, there's more than one of these things. So we can basically get pictures and video from different angles of the object in the sky. And that's very much the goal, to have several trackers in every city across the whole country.
Yeah, I have one set up here in Houston on top of a building near downtown. And with that fisheye camera, you can see, you know, 20 miles in every direction easily from that height. And we had that camera out maybe for a week, and we started getting anomalous events on it. So those are put up on our YouTube site, yeah. Once we got these on the YouTube site, people started pouring in to work on those.
How long have you guys been working on this project? Because it said you were going to launch like this summer. That's what it says on the main. I forget where it said, but it was like coming this summer or something.
Yeah, so we've been writing software and working out the platform since about February. We really started picking up the pace over the last couple of months. The community has grown so much. So we're hoping to get a release out for the general public this month. that people can start deploying. We do have test nodes out there with testers and people massaging out the bugs on in the current platform. But we're definitely getting there. We should have something out in a few weeks.
Yeah, if anybody wants to come help test, jump into that chat.skyhub.org and let us know that you want to help us test. And we'll put you to work for sure.
How many people how many would you say, you got the one in Houston, how many right now, how many of these things are up and running right now, would you say? I assume you guys have kind of got a few out there to so you can work out all the bugs and stuff, right?
So we're kind of spread out. We've got, I think, two in Houston, and then I have a few deployed at my house. We've got some in Virginia. We've got one in Austria, and we have a couple other developers and testers that have deployed units. And honestly, I'm not even sure where they're at.
Yeah,
we probably
just
have
about
close
10.
To 10. Yeah.
And part of the this is kind of like I'm looking at this here. There's two components here. There's this, you got all these sensors, and it says tracker. So what is, it says tracker is responsible for monitoring the data feeds from the sensors. I'm not a scientist or anything, and I think I don't know, maybe if Cogswell's listening, but otherwise I don't know if there's that many scientists in my audience. So I guess what is this? My question is this like, no, this isn't like akin to someone just pointing a video camera up at the sky. So like, what information are you trying to collect with these sensors, I like to think of them as like little hubs, with little hubs that you want to have all over the place. So what are you trying to pick up with that?
So it's interesting, because if we back up a little bit and just consider what a UFO is, we don't actually know. So
right.
There's a lot of theories out there that there's these extremely sophisticated aircraft flying around our skies, and we have pretty good evidence for that, but we don't really know how they work. We don't know what kind of technology they use. So the idea is the tracker is really an observational science effort. So we want to take advantage of all the advancements in technology and deploy sensors, detect basically every environmental thing that we can. So we're looking at things like accelerometer, gyroscopes, magnetic fields, barometric pressure, temperature, humidity, and even things like RF detection and scanning. And other environmental factors like that, and collecting them all from all over the world and aggregating them. So if, let's say, a UFO somehow impacts the environment or emits a magnetic field or impacts pressure or temperature in its local area, we should be able to detect anomalies like that.
Interesting. All right. So it's not, yeah, so it's not just like, oh, you're just got a camera pointed up and you're filming, which like the analogy I use, really rudimentary, but yeah. All right. That makes sense. Now, I don't mean to hammer the price thing, but I see these stories like about the rover, on Mars, and it's like it's outfitted with I'm sure it's not outfitted with the same it's got a higher grade a magnetometer on the Mars rover, I'm sure, than when we'd be on the Skyhub thing. But like, how do you envision? Is that all within the $300? Are you going to have all this sort of sensory equipment? That kind of stuff, is that easy to get and integrate into a machine?
It is relatively easy. So the base tracker right now, the $300 price point, really includes a camera and a GPS and the processing platform to process your video data. So if you want to add additional sensors, you can get all the sensors for probably around $150. And that gives you basically all the sensors we just talked about.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty sophisticated. So you can go pick up like a temperature sensor for like $8 and pick up a magnetometer for like $12. So essentially, we tried to pick really cost-effective platforms that is an easy barrier for entry for developers and for consumers that just want to assemble this thing.
And we have all of the stuff that we've got all the stuff listed on the wiki which there's a link on skyhub.org in the resources tab for you to go to the wiki, and you can read about each one of those sensors in detail.
Oh, yeah, now I'm on one here. It's, yeah, skyhub.org/hardware.html has a bunch of stuff on the different analyzers and stuff. Yeah, all right. And so ostensibly, right, so someone gets the gets going with the tracker, and then they hook up to the system, you know. Is that what, is that the, that's kind of like the other big part of this, is the shared – What is this machine learning? What is that? What does this do? Is this like something that's going to synthesize all this information that's coming in?
So yeah, so I can tackle this one. So there's been a lot of advancements in computing over the last few years, and machine learning. You always hear machine learning and AI. So NVIDIA has really made great strides with machine learning. They're building smaller platforms with custom chips that are good for video processing and basically running neural networks. So the idea was, we can go buy a board for $100 from NVIDIA, and we can run machine learning models and process video streams real time and actually detect objects real time in video streams. So that's essentially what we're doing. We're using edge analytics, using machine learning on all these trackers across the globe to automatically detect objects real time and aggregate all this data into the SkyHub tracker cloud.
And then everybody will get access to it, is kind of the idea.
Yeah, so
right.
The idea is that we can help aggregate this data and make it public for everybody. So all the data that is collected on the SkyHub network is licensed under a Creative Commons license. So we want to make it free for public and academic use. Now, we do have a stipulation for we don't allow non-commercial use, but we want to push
don't,
for
we don't allow commercial
no, you don't
use.
Allow commercial use.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Right.
So we really want to push the public to be able to
that's
look
why,
at the
That's
data
why you're the legal advisor, Adam. I'm glad we had you on.
Right.
Already corrected me. So the goal is really to make everything accessible. And one of the reasons for this is, you know, a lot of the mainstream science doesn't want to touch this topic. So our goal is to aggregate this data and make it extremely accessible and affordable, free, for them to get a hold of and study and analyze and do research on.
And how big is, you say you have a big, like we talked about this community for a while, like how – what is this like a place where people are congregating online to, I see, join the chat and source code. That looks like some kind of group thing, but I don't know. But like, where is this community that you speak of?
Yeah, the chat.skyhub.org. That's where we want to get people into that chat room. And right now I think we've got almost 500 people signed up for it. And really no matter what time of day or night you go on there, there's somebody on there talking about these trackers and how they're going to build it or how they're going to test it or what new sensors they want to put on it. So it's a pretty live chat room.
All right. I'm going – oh, Jesus. I just went into the chat now. That was that doorbell sound. All right. Well, see, there you go, folks. It's easy to sign up for the chat. So if you want to get in there – and check it out. So, okay, so how many – I'm trying to see this vision as it progresses. You know what I'm saying? So what's your sort of next step here to – you said you were releasing – I didn't quite understand what you said you're going to release something later this month. What is this release you're going to have later in the month?
So right now, the release this month will be our first stable release for the general public. So – basically, we'll have a software release ready to go that's stable for people to deploy onto the network. And that's really what we're trying to do. So it'll be something a little more polished, stable, and mature that people can grab the software and get the hardware and deploy their tracker and start watching the skies with us.
All right, so they can kind of get right in on it as soon as possible.
No,
right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, every morning when you wake up, you're going to have you know, 10 or 12 different things that pop up on your user interface on your dashboard that you can flip through and see if anything strange happened. So it's kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It reminds me like kind of the SETI at home idea. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that at all. It's kind of, I think they have something like that.
Shostak. Yeah, about that.
I like Seth. I saw his article the other day. I thought it was actually pretty realistic. I thought, in regards to the New York Times thing, he was saying, for people to know what I'm talking about, he was saying that it seems more likely that some other country would be interested in our weapons than aliens. But, you know, that could be a logical fallacy where you apply human motivations to aliens. Who knows what the aliens want? So I guess here's sort of a philosophical question. We can kind of get back to sort of the practice of, the Skyhawk project in general. But one of the sort of – it's funny. I like what you're doing. It's funny that it's sort of come along now at this time when people are really pushing UFO disclosure. People could debate all day whether or not, you know, this is slowly unfolding right now. Some people think it is. Some people think it's just another long con that's going on, and we're all going to have, you know, the football pulled out from under us like Charlie Brown. That's neither here nor there. The point being is that for many, many years, I've been in this for a long time, for many years, the plaintive wail of the UFO people was that we don't need any more. We have all the sightings information we need. Why do we need to collect any more cases? We know this is real, and now tell us the answer, government. So I guess what's your counter to that sort of philosophical argument? Why do we need more information? I mean, I could answer for you. If somebody posed this question to me, I could come up with an answer. So it's, I'm not, you know, I don't,
we
I don't have a preconceived. What's that?
Or we can't see the data. We can't see the data that the government collects or the stuff they've got pouring through NORAD and the stuff they collect in in the atmosphere with the satellites. So, you know, we want to build our own data.
Yep.
Okay. See, that's a fair, very good answer. That's a fair answer. Because I was going to say later on, and another sort of observation is I can imagine it in a sense, it's kind of maddening because one assumes that the government already has a way more sophisticated version of Skyhawk, probably like satellites looking down on the planet that track all this stuff. So it's like, here we go. You know, this should go to show you folks the difference between what the government can do and what we can do is we have to start from scratch here and build our own network and everything while they have clearly they have like some kind of sophisticated satellite system watching over like the whole planet. So one would assume this is a David versus Goliath situation. But, Steve, what do you think of that idea? I guess you're kind of new to UFO world, so you may have not run into that idea, but it's, I've heard it for a long time where it's like, MUFON has all these cases, and I forget the guy's name there up in the Pacific Northwest, but he runs the UFO hotline. So it's like, but they're different kinds of UFO reports. They're not necessarily, like you were saying, that you take the people out of it. So I guess, what can we do with this information? Maybe that's a better way of phrasing it. What do you envision us being able to do with the information that's collected from this stuff other than, say, a UFO flew through here?
So it's kind of interesting. I'm actually kind of a skeptic, and I'm a skeptic of just about everything. I'm even skeptical about a lot of stuff in the UFO community. So the issue with UFOs, right? So people say we have all this data. However, the scientific community is hardly involved in the research of UFOs.
Right.
And they're not involved because they're also skeptical, and they also acknowledge that there's a lack of physical and credible evidence. Yes, we have sighting reports, and we've got photos. A lot of are blurry photos, and a lot of the times you really don't even know if the photo is real or not.
Right,
so,
right.
You have all this anecdotal and circumstantial evidence, and like the MUFON reports are a perfect example. Something happened to these people. They saw something, even the abduction reportings, something happened, but we don't actually know what happened. So the idea is that we can get enough physical evidence, remove the human element, and it's really a plea to the scientific community and a resource for the public to say, okay, everybody, this is really happening. We have hard data. You can't ignore this. So it's not something that can be easily dismissed like a personal experience can or a blurry photo on YouTube. So we're really hoping to collect high fidelity data with, you know, solid provenance. They know where the data came from. They know how it was collected. And there's no confusion on where it came from and what it is.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Now, believe me, I wasn't necessarily trying to make the case for that argument. It's just one that I've heard for a long time. Because to me, it's like, well, I'm of the opinion, I think that we should try and figure it out on our own without relying on the government to tell us what, if anything, they know. Because I'd rather know on my own than know based on what they say. Because who the fuck knows if they're telling the truth or not? I mean, they've been lying all this time. Why wouldn't they keep lying? So, to me, it's like it's on the UFO community to solve this, not to break the case by way of the government. But that's a whole other kettle of fish, and we can maybe explore that later on in the program. But inspired by what Adam was telling us, I keep wanting to call you Alan. Sorry, Adam, if I do it, just I apologize.
It's okay.
You get the double
Adam
first
Allen
name.
Yeah. It happens.
Okay, so I don't want to catch you off guard, but I'm on, and we'll have a link to this at the Banal America page. Folks can look it up on SkyHub on YouTube. So I'm on your page here on YouTube. It's SkyHub captures a UAP that initially appears to be an airplane, Houston, Texas, on May 27, 2020. I don't know if you're able to see this or not, but can you kind of tell me what I'm looking at here? Because it looks like I'm looking at a globe.
That's the fisheye.
I see you've circled the moon. Oh, okay, so this is, now that you circled the moon, I kind of understand now. So this is what people would see from their tracker?
That's right. That's
very cool.
We kind of helped out the viewers by, marking what items are on that screen, what objects are on the screen. It looks like there's a couple of aircraft. There's a helicopter at one point that goes by. So you've got lots of stuff to look at. There's a sensor on that fisheye that is basically rated at 0.001 lux, which means it can see a candle from I don't even know how many miles away. It's a super sensitive nighttime CCD sensor. And we can see aircraft at, you know, cruising altitude going across that camera's lens all night long. And in those videos that we posted, we see what just looks exactly like any other aircraft going, 30,000 feet over our heads, and then it just stops. And then it starts going another direction. So we saw a couple of them that one night, and it acts an awful lot like some of those other UAPs that people say, they see up in the sky that move nonsensically, zigzagging around. So we went ahead and posted those, and hopefully we're going to get tons more of those kind of videos as we grow the network.
Now, have you integrated, because my first thought looking at this video, and I wouldn't call myself a skeptic, but I guess you might say I'm like a critic, so it's like I need to, as cliche as it sounds, I want to believe. I really do. I want to believe, but I have a hard time. I have a hard time doing so very more often than not. So, have you overlapped your software or whatever you want to call it with how there's like websites you can track all the flights in the world?
That's also
like,
part of
you,
the tracker.
Yep.
What's that?
I'm glad you brought that up because we actually support ADS-B in our platform. So ADS-B is the signal that planes broadcast with their position. So in your tracker, you can go buy a $5 antenna and a $20 FlightAware USB stick and plug it into the tracker, and we'll collect all the flight data from your area so we can rule out aircraft from from your video camera, essentially.
Yeah.
So that will help us roll out known aircraft.
Yeah, I think that would be like a big addition to it, because then way, you know, because as soon as anyone sees it, they're like, that's just an airplane, or that's a traffic helicopter, or whatever, you know what I mean? And then it's like, well, no, I can show you that there's nothing on the flight tracker for what this would be. So.
Right. We're also going to build in a satellite tracker as well. So we're gonna be able to weed out those events.
Now, would it be able to pick up like a, I guess, how about like, does it run in the daytime?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, all day.
24/7.
And it would look like this? It would look like this sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, X-ray or whatever, infrared or something?
You're looking at IR with that nighttime, but
okay,
during the
yeah.
day, it's in full color during the day.
I see one, yeah. Okay.
The great thing about these cameras is that when they're doing edge processing, they're not sending all that video into the cloud. They're just sending the video of the good stuff. So they're going to weed out the helicopters and the aircraft that we know about. And that's what's so great about this system we're putting together. We're going to save a lot of data.
Yeah, I highly recommend folks go to the SkyHub YouTube page. This kind of encapsulates more of what, this kind of can puts a picture on what their sensors are looking at. What I like is see you also have here insect causes streak from IR at night, bird triggers. So you guys are I like that you're not just like, hey, look at this. I saw a video yesterday that was like some dude's thing filmed a bug on his doorbell camera, and it did look like a fairy. It really did. I don't know what kind of bug it was, but it was a bug, folks. It wasn't a fucking fairy. But it was like, it was on a bunch of websites. We did not do it at Coast to Coast, but it was on a bunch of websites, and it was like, that definitely looks like a fairy, man. So I like that you guys are rational enough to at least be like, to show, you know, that this, and it, what I'm seeing here is to show that the prosaic stuff gets picked up on here too. And what is good, you know, I see this bird triggers motion detection. You can really see that it's a bird. That's good, because some of these things, even some of these videos you see, sometimes they're birds, but I guess maybe more because of the angle that the person's filming it, it looks like something anomalous. So I guess shooting it sort of the way that you guys are doing it is a lot better than being on the ground and shooting kind of like at an angle from the observer's point of view.
And these cameras are really good too. They're really clear.
Yeah. They're really clear. And you know, that's kind of the benefit of trying to get multiple people in the same area to deploy cameras, because something might look strange in one camera, but if someone gets another perspective, you'd be able to explain it a little bit better. You get different vantage points to kind of explain and analyze your video, because sometimes, you know, IR will cause weird effects when it shines against objects at night. So if you go on the internet, you're going to see all these pictures of orbs and like UFOs floating around, but really, like, sometimes it's just IR backscatter on the lens of the camera or the sensor of the camera. So we try to minimize those kinds of false positives.
And
yeah,
so
we absolutely don't have the IR on. We keep the IR off on the night cameras. So you're not going to pick up the bug zipping across the screen that looks like a UFO. It's, you know, a huge UFO. It's actually just a regular housefly.
Yeah. Now, what about drones? That would be, I feel like, that's sort of the go-to thing that everyone uses to explain away.
Yeah,
we
have a drone guy now. One of the 500 people that have joined this project, I think, is going to deploy some drones over some of these cameras, so that, you know, we'll have an absolute, you know, positive result for what a drone is. And I'm not sure if that's been started yet, but that's what we've been discussing in one of the chat rooms.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be good. There's a guy, he's out in Italy. His name's Scott. I always get him confused with his nemesis, so I don't want to get Scott Brando. I always get him confused with Scott Waring, who is the UFO Sightings Daily guy. And they're like Tom and Jerry, these two. But Scott Brando, I've encouraged him endlessly because he can look at these videos and he needs to make like a chart that can just show you what some of these are. Because he, almost any UFO video I find online, he can find some other instance of what really it was. You know, like, oh, here's a known thing of a jet dropping flares, and it matches this thing that happened over Kansas City. So,
jump in the chat room. He needs to jump in the chat room and tell us when he can sit down with us and go through his database, because we'll feed it into ours, and, you know, obviously we're trying to build a database for the machine learning to take over, so we'll be more than happy to talk to him.
Oh,
yeah, he's got a good eye for these things, and like I said, I'd rather someone be like, hey man, it's a balloon, before I go through the trouble of writing up a thing about this weird UFO or whatever. So yeah, he does really good work. So it's going to be open source. So what happens, I guess, okay, so somebody, let's say somebody films something anomalous, then what do you do? I guess there's sort of a network already of people. So like if I film one that went by my thing, then what, you'd want someone nearby to see? You really need a lot of coverage though, right? I mean, you need relatively, you know, a few, not necessarily maybe even in every town, but you need something a few dozen miles away or whatever. You need some overlap, right? Isn't that kind of part of the problem in a sense?
So the overlap won't
be required. Or the challenge.
Required.
Let's say the challenge. It's not a problem. It's a challenge.
It definitely is a challenge. So it definitely is better to have more trackers in one region than it is, you know, we want to have multiple trackers get different positions. We understand globe is pretty big, so it's not going to be the case where we're always going to get multiple trackers in the same spot. But, you know, we get the word out there, talking to people like you and kind of talking about SkyHub and getting people excited and involved. The other thing is, it's not just about UFOs, right? So researchers are starting to get interested about meteors and weather patterns. And so we're starting to collaborate with other researchers and academics in other areas of science.
That's good, yeah. Well, it seems like more scientists are coming on board with this UFO stuff, so that's, you know, we hope that's the case. We hope it continues. Yeah, it's very interesting. So I'm kind of circling back, I guess, to the hub thing or the tracker itself. So if somebody wants to, then they go to your site and there's kind of like a step-by-step what they need to buy to, or how the instructions on how to make this thing. Because you don't have them available. Is that anything you envision? Because, like, look, dude, I'm fucking lazy. I'm not going to – okay? I would love to have one of these sensors in my backyard, but I'm just, you know, I don't have the wherewithal to make the leap from wanting one in my backyard to building one. So how do you face that challenge? Are you going to eventually have these for sale?
So we've actually talked about this. We've talked about – you know, potentially next year, looking at doing something like an Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign where we take our finished platform and we take it to a hardware manufacturer and have them mass produce a certain number of these so people can just purchase it and get a box and plug it into their internet and plug it into power and they'll be running. So we have talked about it and we do plan on looking into providing a completely finished and built unit for people that aren't interested in the, you know, assembling the tracker themselves. Because we understand people don't want to bother with putting together computers or setting up cameras. They just want a box they can plug in.
Hey, and if there's any of your listeners that have a passion for building stuff, tell them to come on into the chat and we'll put them to work.
Right. I guess ostensibly well, you're the legal man, Adam. Is that something that would be allowed? Let's say I was the opposite of what I am. Let's say I was ambitious. And then I was like, well, shit, I just made one of these like in an afternoon. Why don't I make like 50 of them over the course of a month and then sell them for I don't know, $500 or whatever. You know, that, I guess that's where it gets tricky. Is that allowed? Or would you guys be like, hey, Benal, cut the shit. Quit selling our – is this like a TiVo box? You know, where there's an intellectual property in a sense of that kind of thing. I'm kind of just thinking of all the different angles here with this. I hope that's all right.
So technically, that's okay, right? So when I started writing the software – I released everything under the MIT license. If someone wanted to come take our software and commercialize it, they can commercialize it.
Yeah.
So they could actually go build boxes and sell them to consumers. And you know what? In my mind, that's actually a huge win. If someone wants to go commercialize our box and help build our network, I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, well, it would be good, yeah, in a sense, yeah. It's just kind of like I was just imagining this scenario where someone sets up like a third-party store. But it's like, hey, if people want them, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah,
how
that's
much,
the idea. We did is we created a nonprofit, and you know, we don't ever plan to make a penny on this. We just want to grab and build the database. That's it.
Yeah. And what do you I was going to say, what if UFO disclosure happens? Are you just going to shut everything down? Are you going
to
be like, well, all right, well, we don't need
to ramp it up. If,
no, I know.
If
that's
find out they're real,
saying.
Then we've got more science to do for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then it's kind of like if somebody shot a Bigfoot, then there'd be tons of people out looking for a Bigfoot. So it would stand to reason people would – now that they were real officially, people would have to people would want to catch one of their own like a Pokemon. Now, so you suggested that – Steve, you said you were kind of skeptical. And Adam, you've been in the field. You've been a UFO enthusiast for – I thought you said like 12 years or something. Maybe I misheard.
It's been since 2008,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, since 2008.
So, well, who – I don't know necessarily if you kind of, like, talked about this, but, like, where – how did this even come up amongst you guys to do this? I may have somehow missed that as I was sort of settling into the show, but I don't recall. So, like, how – who – did Corey call you, Steve, and say, hey, let's do this, what was sort of the seed for this whole venture?
So the idea came up. So there was an individual, Joel Dodd and Bob McGuire, who I was working with at UAPTN, and it had a similar idea, and the idea was to essentially point cameras up at the sky. And at that point, it was just an idea, and we started building it out into a platform. Since then, it's really transitioned a lot, but the idea was all these people are standing out there taking videos of UFOs with their cell phones, and they're using terrible cameras, and we're getting all these shaky videos. So the idea was, what if we just put a box with a fixed camera that watched the sky and tracked objects that passed instead of using low-quality cameras and phones and – you know, actually use a good camera to collect this. And that's really how the idea started. We wanted high fidelity video of UFOs that couldn't be confused with other natural, you know, objects.
Yeah. Well, that's what we all want, yeah.
And the idea has really grown from there. I mean, there's been a lot of people in the community that has contributed to the project and helped grow and add ideas and capabilities. So it's been really great. We've grown a lot since February.
We need these people to put
the
boxes out though, right?
Oh yeah. As soon as we get our final release out, we definitely need to get people deploying boxes. We'd like to get, you know, dozens every week deployed.
See, that would be pretty awesome. I think, you know, I'd be interested in seeing sort of that bank robber scenario that I was saying before, where it's like, all right, Adam catches one on his. Well, Adam, you said you have two cameras in Houston. Did one was there a did you look on the other one from the one that had the UFO from YouTube?
No, the cameras I had up, they were one after another because we were testing different types of cameras.
Okay.
So it was just the fisheye at the time.
All right, so you didn't have them like in different locations so you could kind of like cross reference.
No, it was a crazy. It was an electrical storm that night, and this camera's up, you know, 110 feet, 120 feet off the ground, and you know, and there's a raging electrical storm going on. So, you know, I've heard people say that might be a drone, and hey, if it is, it's the coolest drone I've ever seen because it doesn't move like even a pixel when it stops. So yeah, we didn't have another camera on it at the time.
Do you have? Now you've been in this for a long time, Adam. You've been a fan of the phenomenon, if you will. So do you have a theory, an opinion on what this all is?
I have no real solid theory. The more you look at this stuff, the more your theory changes. It seems like I kind of circle through the, you know, all the major. Is it a hidden group of folks that have some technology? You know, is it a natural phenomenon? It just depends how you know. For me, it depends on what month it is. That's what my new theory is.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't think I've heard the. I guess you could call it, the breakaway civilization sort of idea, or like, yeah, secret technology. That's a new one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they've got that stuff, they've been hiding it pretty good.
I do like the idea of like, some people think that there are like creatures, like the UFOs might be creatures somehow, which I find kind of exciting in a way. Like they're not necessarily aliens. They're just somehow, you know, creatures that live in the fucking sky that we don't know about. They live high, you know, they can live higher than birds or whatever. Maybe they come down and land somewhere. Well, I don't know. But to me, that's always kind of been a fascinating, like, idea of, like, well, why couldn't they be? You know, who knows?
Well, that's why we're doing this. I mean, there's people seeing stuff all the time. And you know, if you look at like MUFON's database or New Fork's database, I mean, you've got, you know, 20 sightings every single day that are reported, let alone what actually take place. And, I mean, the things that people are seeing, they're seeing something. It can always be Venus or the moon in some situations, but there's some things that people see that are just too crazy to be a star or an airplane. These things that move, they can sit still, hover, take off, 90-degree turns without slowing down. I mean, these things can move like those Tic Tacs were moving, like we've heard about. If we've got thousands of people with these cameras set up 24 hours a day, these smart sensors that know what they're looking at and they're sending just the good data to us, I think it'll be like somebody analogized it to the first time people looked into a microscope. They immediately started seeing all these little critters crawling around. I think when we've got a really good network set up and a lot of people deployed, we're going to start seeing stuff like right away. And, you know, who knows what they are? And without the data, we're not going to be able to find that out.
Yeah, well, it's exciting in a way because because of my job, I see a lot of UFO videos, so I look at a lot of them. And as I said, my friend there, Scott Brando, he usually can tell me what they are before I get too excited. Sometimes they're odd enough that I kind of just roll them out anyway because they're like, this is a rather unique UFO video, even if it's just a plane, you know, flying behind a volcano and getting obscured by the way, still looks like a ball flying into a volcano. So let's showcase this weird sight. But what I like about what you guys are doing is that it's that your average UFO witness who films something, it's all sort of happenstance, and they just have to be in the right place at the right time. With this, the cameras are going to be there all the time, and they just need the right time to happen. They just need something to happen, so to speak.
Right. They're always watching.
And the other interesting thing is we can deploy trackers out with experiencers, people that are having like frequent UFO experiences, you know, come hit us up. We'll get you a tracker and get you set up. And we'll deploy a tracker on your property where you're having all these UFO sightings. You know, you have these places like Skinwalker Ranch and other people that are having this, you know, periodic UFO events happen. We can definitely throw them out there and see if there's anything to it.
Yeah, well, it's with the way things with the way the phenomenon is, with everyone's luck, the thing would disappear, and then they'd be like, "What the hell, man? You made the UFOs disappear once I tried to record them. What the hell? Get this thing out of here." That's kind of the flummoxing nature of
even that would be a data point. Even that would be a data point.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Steve, you said you kind of just got into this. Have you? I always sort of find it fascinating people who sort of just get into this. What's your impression of UFO world since you've entered into this bizarre community?
It's probably such an unpopular thing, but I think there's a lot of really terrible things in ufology. I think there's some good things, but there's some bad things. I think people get wrapped up in a desire to believe, and they will almost believe anything without evidence. I do think we have compelling evidence, especially the Nimitz incident with the Tic Tac. But when you get into ufology, there's all this mythology and mysticism intertwined with ufology, and I find that hard to swallow. So I think there's a lot of really bad ideas in ufology that kind of hurt the community, and in the sense that if you're a credible scientist or a professional, it's really hard to get into ufology and get involved in the community and deal with all these theories and ideas that really aren't based on science. So what the community is really lacking is good processes and methodologies for vetting data and vetting evidence. So I've run into things in the UFO community I just kind of sigh at. I was like, this doesn't help. But, you know, there's a lot of ideas out there, and I'm not saying any of those ideas are wrong. I'm just saying we need good processes and methods for determining that they're right.
Yeah. Well, what you guys are doing is important. I talked about this with Chris on the show a few weeks ago because I'm hearing what you're saying, Steve, and I'm agreeing with you, and it's part of the thing is, like, now, and I may ruffle some feathers here, it's not meant as a pejorative or whatever, but it's like now there's a lot of – everyone's so hyper-focused on the machinations of this unfolding government, Pentagon, all that stuff, that it's like whether or not the thing in those videos is alien, because that's what everyone really wants, it's the field, if you will, has transformed into almost like it's more like just following the bureaucracy of this UFO thing, and it's really way far away from what you guys are trying to film with the Skyhub project. So that's why I commend you guys for doing that, because you almost, like I said before, there's a sort of a predisposition right now in UFO world where it's like, we've proven UFOs are real, now tell us how the book ends. When it's like, no, we haven't proven they're real yet. So, like, we can't show up and you know, they're not taking us seriously. And part of that, too, is kind of what you mentioned before about it's hard to take the field seriously when it's kind of a lot of really kooky characters and shit. And often the kooky characters are, like, the loudest ones in the room. And it's like, who the fuck wants to get... Who wants to,
here's what I'm thinking.
Who wants to co-author
is what
a paper
happened
with fucking, you know, a guy on Twitter's name is, like, you know, the ass on Mars 523. It's like, lick it. You know, give me a break.
What happens is you'll wind up, if we have enough of these things deployed, you could wind up with people, like with three guys that are out somewhere and they see something, something that, you know, like they see these craft bouncing around in the sky, They see it. They can report it to, you know, just about any of these sighting reporting places. We've got a guy starting one called Sighting.World that we've been working with. So you've got this group of guys that report it, and let's just say we've got these trackers right there in the same spot, and nothing shows up. You know, then you start to get some more data on this stuff. Maybe it is, you know, conscious-based. I've heard that theory floated. So we just can't go wrong with these trackers.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?